Hello and welcome to Starter Set. My name, Ed Sylvester. This is
Sam Bradley.
And welcome to the show that takes you deeper into the pages of Beowulf.
Age of Heroes.
Bow. Hello, Sam. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Ed. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all good, boyo.
Good.
So, ladies and gents, last week we sort of gave you the breakdown of the situation, what we're going to be doing, why we're back, how we're back, where we're back, when we're back?
Possibly.
Which one did I miss? One of them. Doesn't matter.
How we're
why?
Back.
Why? I think it's why. That's the one I missed. But today we're going to be going into a little bit of the mechanics of this new book that we're looking to do, that we're going to be spending some time with, specifically around the story. Next week we'll be doing some character stuff, where Sam gets to do a lot of building of things.
Build me a character, build him true.
Thanks, that was...
That was nice, that wasn't
lovely,
it?
Oh, that lovely little song.
Hey.
So, as I said last week, we've got a few mechanics that are involved with Beowulf, Age of Heroes, that basically allow us to explore the theme in an easily accessible way.
These are the things that last week we were talking about. Oh, they're mechanics that build the setting and help craft the narrative.
Yes.
And the story.
Yes, exactly. So, one of the largest ones, if you remember last week, we talked about the weird, or your weird.
Oh, the portent.
Yes, the characters...
call to action.
Call to action, like... notification that they are a hero. The fact that they can hear this sort of a poem that is basically the building block of the world as it is. Mm-hmm. You can even see it as that, because obviously this is based upon a poem and a text.
Yeah.
Maybe they've somehow got a glimpse of that poem or text that is related to them and their life and their experience within this world.
Yeah.
You could even probably approach your world building as actually all of this is just a story in the first place.
The jump off point as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it's a story told by a skald in a mead hall, and somehow the hero has heard these words echoing back.
Right, yeah. Bad wolf.
Yeah, bad wolf, exactly. oh, that was good Doctor Who back in the day, wasn't it? So, what we thought we would do is for our Let's Play, for when we're actually playing this, we wanted to basically run through the tables that generate the snippet of poem that Sam's hero will hear and have some sort of knowledge and influence the way that he acts within the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, as we sort of discussed a little bit, and we've got this dichotomy between the old world and the new god, these tables and the weird itself can either be something which is very much old world, and it's sort of from, you know, soothsayers, and it's written in the dirt or the stars or the, you know, the trees themselves whisper it from one to the other, or it's actually divine intervention from the big man upstairs himself, and given, you know, the guidance of God. So look.
Let's jump into it.
Let's jump into it. The tables themselves are quite small.
Okay.
But what they do is, if you remember where I spoke about the pools of inspiration that are generated.
Yes.
So there are, as you play the game, Sam will have access to three pools of inspiration, right? Now, this isn't saying, these are tokens. So they're not like, oh, I've gained inspiration. They are a set amount. So once he uses all of these tokens up.
It's gone.
Gone. I actually say Sam has access to it. I also have access to it as the GM, because you can actually roll some monster inspiration tokens. So this obviously kind of allows you to mitigate the toughness of an environment, of a battle, or of an interaction. And if you can link it to the situation, you can basically take one of these inspiration tokens. So for instance, if Sam is in an environment where one of his followers is speaking with on behalf of his people for, I don't know, lodgings.
Yeah.
He could take a token, if it was there, from his follower pool.
Yep.
If Sam was then engaged in a fight with, or like a wrestling match with another warrior, and he wishes to use, you know, his strength to overbear that warrior, wishes to make sure that it happens, he could take a token from the hero pool. if we're getting in a situation where I'm finding maybe that the heroes are approaching a monster in a way that makes it sort of feel a little less impactful as far as the story goes,
mm-hmm.
I might take an inspiration token from the monster pool.
Right, okay.
All of this is linked into the portent. Now, this is interesting as well, because if you link your actions to the portent, a lot of the time you can take... you can get inspiration awarded to you as mm-hmm. well, so it's not just set in that way or that element. But let's get into doing this. So we're going to roll some dice.
Roll some dice.
And basically, these tables give us a couple of nouns and adjectives. Mm-hmm. It's actually only four words, so it's not like a full...
practicing. Yeah.
You know, it's not a full... well, it's probably... could be. Could you get a haiku out of four words? Probably not. Unless they've got...
wouldn't it be great if that
syllables.
Was a haiku?
What I've just said. Yeah, it would be. I wish I'd thought about that beforehand and somehow do it. It's not.
Not even close.
No. So, Sam, do you want to start rolling some dice?
Yes. You're going to write this down as we go?
I can write it down. That's a good shout. Because
I
otherwise
did not bring
I
another
done
pad.
That. Yep.
All right. So I'm rolling a d4 for the first half of the potent.
Yes.
This delineates whether it's going to be adjective, 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 noun, noun, adjective, or noun, noun.
Noun, noun.
Four.
So have a four.
Noun, noun.
Noun, noun. So... what we have is now a table where you've got a 1 to 6 across the top of the table and a 1 to 6 down the side of the table.
Page 98, if you have the book.
If you have the book. Sam will basically roll 2d6s mm-hmm. and we'll cross-compare them to give us that first noun-noun combo.
One and one. Twilight. So
first one is twilight.
And because it's noun-noun, I have to roll for another noun.
On the noun table.
Okay, stop saying noun. Ooh, that went off the table. Two. Twilight clamor.
Clamor. So, twilight, what inspiration token pool does that go into?
It's the red one.
Red one. So that is an inspiration token into the monster pool.
Oh dear. But clamor is blue.
Ah, which is the follower pool.
Yes, it is.
Perfect. So we have twilight clamor as the first part of the portent.
And now I have to roll a second d4.
Yep.
For the second half of the portent, same rules as before. That's a 3, that's noun adjective.
Oh.
So the first one will go from noun, so we have twilight clamor. Funeral.
Oh.
Blimey. Oathbound.
Funeral oathbound.
Twilight clamor, funeral oathbound.
Okay, perfect. So, funeral, where which pool am I adding to for funeral?
Monsters again.
Monsters! Lovely. And then Oathbound?
Oathbound is also monsters.
Wow, okay.
I'm going to die.
Perfect. So
is it me and my body against three monsters?
I feel good about this. So as we start out the game, and that you can change and you can... there are abilities that allow you to add to the pool.
Yep.
But when we start, basically...
are we sticking with that?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
No.
Give me a...
No takes backsies.
I'm not taking it backsies. I'm doing a new seas.
What, do you want to do one more to see what we get?
Just show the folks how it
fine.
Works.
Well, but let's... before we do that, let's see how potentially we could, like, link these together to a situation within a game. All right?
Like,
so you've got this kind of floating around in your background. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you were chilling by a stream one day and you kind of heard this mumbling out of those.
Yeah. What is clamor?
Noise, right?
All right. Twilight noise.
So you could literally be like going to sleep or something like that and for some reason a cockerel crows.
Yeah.
Like that.
That means the monster's here.
Yeah, something on those lines. Funeral oathbound. Like a cockerel goes and it's almost like that is the oath binding that says like death shall be upon us.
Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. Let's do another one just to do another one.
Yep, love it.
Okay, so first off we have a 3, so that is noun adjective.
Ooh.
Rolling my 2d6, one off the table, 4 and 2. Portent. Again with the table. Portent beaten.
Beaten. Oh, okay.
I have to roll a d4.
As in physically beaten? Or...
wow.
Wow, interesting.
Well, there you go. 2. That is adjective noun.
Mm-hmm.
So we have portent beaten. Glinting.
Glinting.
Waves.
Ah. Mm. Wow. This one feels a lot more positive.
Well, it's...
What's portent?
Yeah, portent is monster.
Monster. What is beaten?
I don't know. Not monster. It's a follower. Blue.
Follower. Perfect. Glinting.
Glinting is...
Is that hero? I think it's hero, isn't it?
I can't find it. Yes, it is.
Excellent. And then waves. Hello.
Follower.
Follower. Okay, cool. So this is a lot more...
So read that back to me.
So this is portent beaten, glinting waves.
Oh. Everything ends at the sea.
Yeah.
You find the sea, you feel like you're lost in the world, but you know that the monster is out there. You have to go to it. You can't lure that serpent out of the sea. You have to go to it.
Very interesting. So we could sit and we've had the conversation around how you can use this to influence as a GM. You can influence your game.
Yeah.
That might make me go, right, I am going to have a sea-based, you know, sea-based enemy to fight here. It might be like a sea worm who's in a caught in like a cave system, sea cave system, and that's where like all of their treasure and everything is kept.
Mm. Like a unicorn in a fishing net.
Yes, or something like a unicorn in a fishing net. Sure, Sam.
I like yours more.
So I could use that to influence my or I could just go. Whatever, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with that is...
I like the first one, actually. Well, the first one's really good.
That's the one we're actually going to go with, because that's the first one we said.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a lot of monster-based things for me.
I'm all about that life.
So that's how you create the portent, which you use to then influence as you're going through the game.
So read me that portent we're using.
Twilight Clamour, Funeral Oathbound.
Okay.
All right.
I like it.
Perfect. And that actually really well brings us onto something else, which is basically set up in the world of Beowulf and how this works. Now, if you know the poem, you might be aware of how impactful monsters are within that world.
Mm.
Obviously, you have Grendel, who is this...
Grendelwald, isn't it?
Grendel, I think it's...
Yeah.
One or two. But he...
Oh, no, Grendelwald is fucking
is,
Harry
magics.
Potter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's basically sort of this half-giant who is terrorizing a village. Mm-hmm. And
his mother, right? That's in it
yes,
as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah, very much so. And currently they can't defeat him, okay? Now, to represent this, Beowulf gives most of their monsters a stat which is called undefeatable.
Ooh.
Okay? What this means is if a monster has the feat undefeatable still there... They only ever take 1 point of damage from any attack.
That's mental.
So really difficult to take down.
Mm-hmm.
But every monster has a weakness. Grendel, for instance, he was very good at hearing things, but that meant that he was weak to loud noises.
Right.
So they start banging on the shields, bish, bash, bosh. Grendel gets upset, take him out.
Right.
It's similar to that of... It reflects quite nicely to that of like The Witcher and things like that, where
if you
know the thing that you're hunting and you prepare in the correct way, easier to take down.
Yeah.
So most monsters have a stat block which is where you can remove the undefeatable feature.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've got one of the monsters open here.
What you got?
It's a March Stepper.
Oh dear.
Or Meerstepper.
Okay.
Just as a to preempt here for actually part of it, I will not be tempting to butcher the original names. Like there's very much a if you're not very good at languages, here's the westernized statement, and I'll be doing that because I'll undoubtedly butcher something and say something incredibly wrong.
Okay.
So a March Stepper is basically an undead who has lost its connection to like where it's buried.
Annoying.
And they wander the wilderness, right?
Okay.
Now, they can technically be bound after they've wandered their wilderness. Eventually, they find a place where they get bound to, and typically, it's a tree. Okay?
Okay.
So if you find out the tree that they are bound to...
Fuck the tree up.
...and burn it...
Got it.
...you then remove the undefeatable feature. So a lot of Beowulf is, yes, you're there as the hero to take out the current threat, whatever it is, be it very like physical and direct, or it could be sort of background, pervasive, slipping in, poisoning certain areas, people's minds and infecting dreams, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff. You take the time, You do the research and then you get the job done.
Like it.
Some heroes are much better at doing the researchy part of it and removing that undefeatable...
Trap makers, for example.
Exactly.
You get one hit, but you know it's going to work. Yes. And you're pretty sure it's going to work.
Yeah, very much so. So, really interesting point is once you've removed that undefeatable feature, they also then start to get weaknesses and things like that.
Okay.
I can't remember. I've actually chosen a one where they don't have that because ultimately these guys are not sort of like a big bad. They're
mid-tier. More of a foot soldier.
Yeah, exactly. So, for instance, you might have a crew of them and actually have to go and burn a specific wood.
Right, okay.
And then you can go and take them out. And then after that point, the undefeatable feature gets removed and they take full damage of the things that you actually get involved with.
Mm.
The other thing that's quite interesting as well is they represent combat quite interestingly as far as human-to-human goes.
Okay.
So there are like brigand stat blocks and things like that because, you know, you've got to represent that not all people are going to be inherently good.
Yeah.
And those guys will stop fighting after a certain point.
Right, okay. So they don't want to lose their life.
Exactly. So their undefeatable elements are around, like, if you take one of their friends down,
right,
they go,
oh no.
Oh, Barry's gone. All right.
Not Barry, my good ones.
Exactly. We give up, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's less, you know, some not a problem with Dungeons and Dragons, but you know, you have this area where it's like the numbers are all there, and
you're just hitting, but you've missed a couple of times. So it's like it's one goblin.
Yeah, exactly. It's a one goblin. Yeah. You know, you're gonna win the combat, like, and it was like set up that you were gonna win the combat four turns ago. But everybody's just rolling terribly, and you're all sitting there just going, God, can we just take out this bloody, like, you know what I mean? It slows the story down.
Yeah.
Putting something like this into it actually makes it more, number one, more realistic, but also allows you to tell the story, not quicker, but in a more concise way.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's the interesting mechanic that gets linked in with the monsters. They all have different... undefeatable features. I didn't know if I wanted to tell you this before we played it because I thought it might have been quite interesting.
Yeah.
But obviously there's an area here where you have to kind of avoid the metagaming piece.
Yes, cool.
Because potentially the first time you encounter this monster, you shouldn't have the idea that actually I need to go and find out what their first off. Like,
oh, this doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. It's like where everybody goes, like, those are trolls. Mm. This is a fight in sort of, you know, D&D. Trolls, fire. I used to do fire. Mm-hmm. And they all, somehow somebody finds out that it's fire that does the damage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm. They never come near the camp.
Yeah. And you know, people start using fire weapons and things like that where they've never used it, kind of stuff, which is fine, whatever. I'm not really that much of an anal DM to be like, you don't know that that's a thing, take it all back because quick game is a fun game. Next up, and we haven't really talked too much about these, but it's a large part of the game,
okay. And
this is your followers,
right? Your crew,
yes,
so to
your
speak.
Crew, the people that will, you know, help you out during your adventures. This is set up to basically, we know that D&D creates specialists, right? You get your min-maxes, and that's fine. That's part of the role in the stats. That's how that all works.
Yeah.
But what it does mean is if you only have one hero or one player, you might come across something which is just, it's just a door and you can never theoretically get through it. If you're not, you know, it's a locked door.
If you're not a
lock picky,
or you're not a strong, not a strong girl.
I'm a talky person.
Yeah.
That's all I've done my entire life. I don't know how to pick locks.
Mm.
What do? I'm stuck. I walk home. Done. End of adventure.
Yeah.
What this allows the followers to do is be that other tool.
You know
what I mean?
The sidekick.
Exactly. And in the book, you start out with followers. It says you have some followers.
Mm-hmm.
There's some interesting things that you always have access to.
Spears,
which is really fun. We were going to talk about that in Heroes, but actually I think it might as well bring it up now. No matter the situation you're in...
Always got a spear.
You always have a spear. You always have access to a spear. Mm-hmm. Whether it be a branch with a slightly pointy bit at the end, somebody's knocked...
Or like a proper spear, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, a real spear because it's been knocked off a... like a...
truck.
Sure.
I'll have that. Thank you.
Ye oldie truck.
Yeah.
Or knocked off a weapons rack. Mm-hmm. Or like a broom handle's broken in front of you, but it's got a pointy stick on the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You always have access to a spear. Which I think is really... It's kind of quite emotive because realistically,
you feel that, yeah, that last ditch sort of grab the spear and that yeah. one last shot,
and it, and because this environment that we're in is so old school,
mm-hmm.
swords and things like that, like just getting all that metal together,
yeah, it's a lot,
it's a big deal, and you wouldn't see swords being used as
willy nilly.
Yeah, primarily, I imagine most of them will be ceremonial and go. It's a thing of wealth.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
because it's going, look how much metal I can use. If when we highlighted how important blacksmiths are,
yeah,
and you're going, we know you're important. We haven't got mining capabilities yet, not mm-hmm. massive ones. I need you to put all of this metal into this big knife
together,
please. So a spear in itself is like the OG weapon. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can find that theoretically
anywhere.
In a wood,
yeah,
without having to do too much stuff to it.
Yeah,
a big stick is a spear to a. To a degree.
Nice.
Just take a sip of my water. So, followers.
Yep.
The way that they operate is really interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have your crew, your people, your posse that follow you around.
Yeah.
And it's not you just controlling a load of other player characters, right?
Yeah.
So, it's not you just going... Imagine if this was a D&D game and we were just playing normal D&D. It's yeah. not you controlling a paladin, a wizard,
mm-hmm.
a fighter, and a rogue.
Yeah.
It's you controlling your hero, who is definitely the hero, the main person.
Character.
Yeah. But has access to abilities that are pulled from...
Thanks to his followers.
Exactly. So... Each turn, you have something called the follower turn,
mm-hmm.
which is where you can access something from your follower.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't necessarily
Loves
like...
Loves crisps. Go.
Yeah, you fucking throw some Walkers, a pack of Walkers out.
Nice. Other brands of crisps are available.
True. They basically use something called a gift. So followers are set up and they start out with a couple of gifts
mm-hmm.
and usually have, I think it's a burden as well.
Yes, they do.
So... You would say, on my follower turn, I'm going to use, I don't know, there's a gift called Bearded Axe, which
right.
allows you to de-shield
a
creature, an enemy.
Yeah, nice.
So the idea there is obviously you've got a warrior follower, and you go, my follower turn, I'm going to use Bearded Axe. That follower comes in
yeah.
with his axe, hooks it over the top of the shield, and wrenches it out of the hands of the,
nice.
The enemy, and then you carry on.
Yeah.
You also have follower reactions. So
ooh.
Theoretically, each turn that mm-hmm. you take, you've got your action,
mm-hmm.
a follower reaction, or maybe your reaction,
yeah.
and a follower turn.
Yep.
When you use your followers, you do something called activating them.
Okay.
So you activate your follower, do your do the gift that follower has,
yep.
bish bash boss, they're then done.
Right.
You have a long rest, they can then do that thing again, basically.
Right, okay, so it's a one and done thing with them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, very much so. But obviously you have a few of them following around. Now, obviously you can't go around just being like, right, I'm going to...
Get him, fellas!
Yeah, I'm going to get like fucking 50 followers, off I
yeah.
go. There is a limitation to this,
mm-hmm.
and this is limited by your...
That's basically an army, isn't it? That's
yeah.
a posse.
Yeah, exactly. And when we know that an army ultimately looks like... 10 to 15 people.
Yeah.
And they can change a big, like, they can change
mm-hmm.
a lot of stuff going on. That's a big deal. So, to limit that and your influence with, or your renown, which
mm-hmm.
is what it actually is, you it's related to your statistics, which is, I think it's your charisma modifier
mm-hmm.
plus half your proficiency.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Nice and easy.
So, if you're particularly chatty, you can theoretically come out with sort of four followers, five followers, kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and have a good time that way. And there are, again, there are heroes who are set up to be follower centric. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, brilliant. Now, followers can die. Followers,
yes, they can.
Followers can also leave.
Oh.
And they can leave in certain different ways.
Okay.
So, as you know, remember when we started last episode, we said a follower could join you.
Yeah.
Because they want to become a hero
themselves.
Themselves,
right.
as a follower progresses with you through adventurers, they earn more gifts. They get more experience, they become better people at what they're doing. If they get, I think it's 7 gifts, they are now considered to basically have graduated and off they go to heroing. And you can choose to celebrate that and say like, well done, here you are.
Or kill them because there can only be one.
Or Highlander it, yeah. No, you send them off in a way that gives you a big bunch of experience, basically, which is nice. Or if you're going, I like having this guy around, you can like get them bonded to you and they swear an oath to yourself.
Nice.
However, that does have a little bit of drawbacks because there are something where followers basically feel neglected. So if you like bond them to yourself, they're sitting there going like, you know, this is like when you've worked a job for 10 years and you're sitting there going like, I know how to do this job. I need this promotion.
Well, HR's going to cut your hands off for getting any more of that lip.
Yeah, so exactly. So you then go,
maybe go and make some more spears.
All right, I'm pissed off. I'm going to quiet quit. And well, whatever.
There isn't, no. If you quiet quit, you just get clubbed to death and left in the woods.
Exactly. There you go. So basically, either they can wait 2 years in-game years, and then they go, which is obviously a long time. However, you can have situations during downtimes where that could theoretically pass like quite quickly. It's almost like, if you imagine each adventure is like a TV series.
Yeah.
And you know sometimes you come back between a series and it's a few years have passed.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Okay. I hate that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So what it allows you to do is allows you to build bonds with your followers because you enjoy using their abilities, but also hopefully your GM will roleplay them in a certain way that kind of adheres them to yourself and the way that they operate.
Or doesn't. Or whatever.
And you're like, fucking hell, I hate that guy.
But he's great with a switchblade.
He's got that bloody ability that I really like using all the time.
Yeah. Could you train someone more affable to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Could you just tell this guy over here, because I like him. She's pretty good too. Just talk to her, set her up. Brilliant, thank you. So that's how that works. And you basically have this kind of morale tracker almost.
Yeah.
To look after your followers. Neglected ones will look to leave.
Yeah.
Ones who feel valued will look to advance, basically. I weirdly do feel like I'm in some sort of like staff retainment meeting now.
Yeah, it's HR. Yeah. So
you reward them, basically. You reward them over time, and your followers become better.
Philippa with the shield, she's quite quiet. I haven't had a shield in weeks.
haven't had shields in weeks. Let's show you what some of those burdens and gifts look like. I did mention burdens. We didn't really talk about that, but I think they're quite obvious.
Yeah.
Drawbacks.
One of them is being blind. One of them is being clumsy. And one of them is being foolish.
Exactly. So you can do things. Oh, here you go. Oathbound. So this is the one that I was talking about. This is technically a burden.
Be one for me.
The follower has promised the hero to remain with them as opposed to seeking their own way. It remains until the follower receives 2 improvements or 2 years pass, whichever comes first. The binding may attract unwanted attention from creatures that can sense the follower is unhappy. So there may be monsters within the world.
Dementors.
Sure. Yes. Gifts. Let's have a look at some of the gifts.
Battle bread.
Yes. So there's some really interesting things in here where you can't start your follower out with a gift, with some of the gifts. They have to be earned over time. So there's like advanced gifts.
Yeah, yes.
When you start, you can build as a player. You can build your followers that you want to have like running around with you. What I will say is for our game, you're not going to have any followers when you begin.
That's fair.
And the reason why I want to do this is we're part of this. I want to show the growth and how this kind of all works and links together. So instead of going like, right, here's all the extra rules and all this admin, we'll do that slowly but surely and build up your crew.
Right.
And hopefully that should be easier for you guys as listeners to sort of follow along with and get introduced to, because the follower people, it is really important to the game.
Yeah.
But there's also a load of other stuff.
Let's not rush it.
Exactly. So gifts, let's have a look at a couple of these. So we've got things like green thumb. If you use a hit die during a short or long rest and eat a meal prepared by this follower, you regain 1 more hit point than your normal first hit die.
Love it.
Yeah, nice. Just a little bop. Combat expert. This follower has advantage on the first attack of each combat
That's
roll.
Super useful.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see, even with just those two...
That is why that is an advanced gift.
Exactly.
Gift.
You can see how they're placed.
Yeah.
The way that characters die is basically they've got set actions, but one of them is to...
Not die.
No, the way that they do die is to basically throw themselves in front of the hero.
Ooh.
So they sacrifice themselves for the greater good.
Right, okay.
I think, and weirdly as well, because this is a harrowing thing, the hero gains XP.
Yeah, because it's like, oh shit!
Yeah, so I think...
Mary hasn't got any knees, go!
What this does is, if you imagine you're in a scrap with a monster that you don't know the defeatable condition
on
yet.
Yeah.
They take you to town because you're doing one hit point power attack.
Yeah, and that's going to take ages.
Exactly. You're getting absolutely messed up and you're about to die. Follower takes a hit for you, dies. And if this is, you know what I mean? This isn't a signal to like get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
You don't know what else is.
Vengeance!
The more you stick around, the more it's going to chip away at your actual
Another
collective...
follower will have to throw themselves in.
Exactly.
And that's going to build other moments. Yeah. Okay, that's... pretty clear.
Yeah. So then you step away, you go, we need to get out of here, let's go and do some research and figure stuff out. Yeah, exactly.
I haven't got any hands or eyes, my lord.
Well, that's
how it
goes.
You're going to struggle.
And, you know, there might be burdens in here, which if one of them see a follower go down, another follower go down, they develop negative feelings towards you. And
he's letting us die, we're just lemmings.
Yeah, exactly. It's just an experience farm for them. And look, that's a big chunk of the mechanics without going into the character side of things.
Yes, which we will do next week, I believe.
Yes, we're going to look at the character mechanics and we're going to build Sam's character for
this
game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this, actually. This should be a lot of fun. Look, hey, everybody, thank you so much for joining.
Mm-hmm.
As always, we have been Starter Set. You have been our listeners. Roll well. And we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.